Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, wait a minute. 1, 2, 3, 4. Go ahead.
The date is January 3rd, 2007. We're at the Amelia Island Museum of History, 233 South 3rd Street, Fernandina Beach, Florida. We are interviewing, the part of the Veterans History Project, William J. Lumpkin, L-U-M-P-K-I-N, born June 8, 1920, in Philadelphia.
That's right.
My name is M.E. or Mac McCaffrey. Do the interview, and assisted by Gerhard Tam, who will be running the equipment. And with that introduction, Mr. Lumpkin, please tell us, if you will, just where you were and a little bit about what you were doing before you joined the Navy.
Well, I got out of high school, and the war started, and I was classified 4A, I think, but I didn't want to go in the Army, so I went down to the Custom House, enlisted in the Navy.
Mm-hmm. And when was that, please? You were served, I see, from 1942 to 45, so you entered very early in the war.
42, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, then what happened?
Well, before that, I was working for the Bell Telephone Company. Mm-hmm. And when I went in the Navy, I guess they thought I knew something about electronics. So I ended up going to fire control school. You know what fire control is?
Yes, sir. Yeah. But please describe it for us.
Well, it's controlling the fire, not the fire with hoses.
The shooting.
The shooting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And where was that?
I was at Great Lakes.
Great Lakes. Did you go to boot camp at Great Lakes?
Great Lakes boot camp. And they, as I said, they thought I knew something about electronics. So I went to fire control school. And I got out of there. Then I went to advanced fire control school.
And where was that?
I was in San Diego.
San Diego.
San Diego.
And fire control school, just briefly, what did you learn?
Well, they had electromechanical devices that generated the fire control problem to solve the fire control problem. And they were very much like the telephone, very similar.
And then when you graduated, what was your rating at that time?
Third class fire patrolman.
Now, did you wear that patch on your right sleeve? Were you a right sleeve?
Oh, yeah. Right arm race.
Right arm?
I think they got rid of that now.
I understand they did.
Yeah.
Right arm
race. That's
rating.
A shame.
Yeah. So you were a right arm?
Oh, yeah. Right arm.
Okay. Then after that, please, what'd you do?
Well, I went aboard the Healy.
And what was the Healy?
It was a tin can.
And that means a destroyer?
Destroyer.
A modern, was it a modern destroyer?
Oh, yes. Okay. We christened it.
Oh, you were a plank owner?
Plank owner.
Oh, plank owner.
Plank owner. Mm-hmm. So that was in San Diego?
No, it was in New York.
Oh, New York.
New York. But she was a good ship. Had a great skipper. He got a Navy Cross. He sunk a cruiser up in the Aleutians.
Is that so?
A cruiser.
Now, so after you went aboard the ship and christened the ship, where did you go? Where did the ship?
Well, we went on shakedown. We went to Bermuda, the usual place you'd go. And we shook the ship down.
Tried it out.
Tried it out. Got all the kinks out of it.
Now, destroyer is a very small ship. Tell us about your living conditions on the ship.
Well, they were terrible. We had two a forward and aft bunkhouse, I guess you call them, sleeping quarters. Mm-hmm. We had a crew of 225, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was a Fletcher class.
Fletcher class.
Fletcher class. 5'5" and a load of 40 millimeters in 20 plates.
5'5"
5'38"
caliber. Well, how was the food?
Good. Good. Except we were out on a duty, a raid or something, and most of the activities like that lasted a month. Then we get back and get reprovisioned. and this one had a little glitch in it. So we kept out there for 3 more weeks, and we gradually ran out of food.
Where was that?
I was in the South Pacific. South Pacific. Gradually ran out of food. And then we started back. I think it was to either Eniwetok or Majuro or...
Majuro. What is Majuro?
An atoll.
Atoll.
That was in the Marshall Islands. And they passed the word to an Australian provision ship we were going to team up with and get some food. Well, we teamed up with this Australian thing. They had a cargo net come out of the hole, and I thought it was full of dead ponies. I could see legs sticking out. It turned out to be Australian mutton. Mutton.
Mutton.
Did you ever eat mutton?
I had a leg of lamb.
Well, lamb is different. Yeah. But mutton.
Oh. What's it like?
Well, they took it aboard. They pulled a ripcord on the cargo net. And they were frozen solid, and they bounced all over the deck. So one of them went over the side. Well, with the mutton aboard, we had a swarm of flies that would follow the ship.
Follow the ship? Oh, God. That was that ripe then.
Mm. But the cooks did a good job. They had mutton fricassee and mutton on the rocks. Mutton coming out. Oh, Jesus.
Well, what does it mean? Describe that for the...
Well, it's so strong tasting.
Yeah, a little bit high.
Yeah,
old.
High. Mm-hmm. We had the supply officer named Higby. And somebody wrote a song about Higby stew. You should feed it to the Japs. It tastes like a pile of shit. This guy had a guitar, and he would sing it over the PA system.
Oh, God. So you had some fun.
Oh, sure. More fun than... stress.
Now, about a destroyer. What was it like to be out in the open ocean in the Pacific on a small destroyer?
Well, you bounced around a lot. We ran into a typhoon once where the waves were 60 feet high.
That was late in the war, I believe, wasn't it?
It was in the middle of the war, as I recall.
60 feet.
Yeah. And we all took hammocks and strung them outside. We thought it was fun. The ship was rolling and the hammocks would swing.
You thought it was fun?
It was fun up until a point where we got the word that 2 tin cans capsized. The skippers of these cans, they chased us out of Ulithi, I believe, to avoid the typhoon. And they weren't refueled, and neither were we. But our skipper had enough sense to bring ballast aboard. Pump seawater into the tanks. But these other 2 guys didn't do it. So and they flipped over.
Rolled over.
Lost all hands.
Where was your... describe where were your duty stations in a combat situation?
Well, I was in the main battery director. I was a pointer. I had a telescope. Mm-hmm. There's a pointer and a trainer. One guy takes the training and the pointer takes the elevation.
The elevation.
Yeah.
Did were you attacked? Did you, aircraft? Or?
You've got to understand, we were in a task force. We were in task force 38 and 58, which was Admiral Spruance and Bull Halsey. Have you heard of Bull Halsey?
And Spruance.
I was never comfortable with that man.
we
was always taking chances, had we thought.
Yeah.
You know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. The task group would be four carriers, a couple of battle wagons, maybe 4 or 6 cruisers, and this whole thing stretched out about 5 miles in the open ocean. and there was a ring of tin cans around it, 16, 20 of us. So the only thing we shot at were jet planes. And I used to get nervous when looking through the telescope. When the wingspan would get out of my field of vision,
pretty close.
I knew they were about 2 miles away. I used to get a little nervous over that.
Did you get hit?
No. No, we never got hit.
Was your fleet the kamikaze, the suicide attack?
No, this is before the kamikaze.
Before that. Okay,
yeah. But we shot down six aircraft.
Six?
A couple of Bettys and Sally and some Zeros.
Now, Betty and Sally, I know, are two twin-engine bombers.
Yeah. Betty's, it's like Navy. Similar to a B-25.
Very close.
A B-26. Mm-hmm. We shot down a B-25.
Did you really? An American?
American.
Yeah.
We had been shooting at the twin-engine bombers, and we were in close to this atoll. And here come a twin-engine bomber out of sight. Couldn't see it for the palm trees. And he jumped up over the, and it was a B-25. I could identify it right away. And I hollered, friendly, friendly, friendly. Ceasefire, ceasefire. But the 40s didn't get the word.
The 40 millimeters.
And they tagged him, and he spun into the ocean. But nobody was killed on it.
Oh,
he made a nice pancake landing.
That's interesting. So that happened. I know that.
So we had six Jap flags and one American flag painted on the bridge.
You did paint it American?
No. No, we didn't. No,
you did not, okay. Then describe more than your experience out there. It's very. Now you say atoll. I'm going to be sure we have that on the tape. AT, it's an atoll, an island.
Atoll.
It's right.
A coral reef.
Yeah.
And it has a sheltered harbor in the center of it. Some of them were huge.
Yeah. How long were you out in the Pacific on the VA?
I think it was two or three years.
2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Did you get any shore leave at all while you were out there?
Shore leave on an atoll?
Well, anything?
Yes. There was one atoll that had a beer place. And you couldn't buy beer. When we went on Liberty, the guys in the whaleboat, we'd say, who wants beer? Give us a couple of dollars. And we'd go down to one of these Quonset huts, and everybody would come out with a case of beer. A case of beer.
And
we'd sit underneath the palm trees and drink the beer and give beer to the Marines who were there. And that was fun.
Case of beer. So you got liberty, some liberty at least.
Oh, yeah. Well, when we got into Hawaii, San Francisco, certainly.
Did you go back to Hawaii for a period of time while you were out there? Stayed in the South Pacific?
Stayed in the South Pacific.
Refueled, rearmed?
Well, we this typhoon I mentioned, it beat the hell out of number one five-inch. It just has a windshield on it. It's about a half-inch armor plate, and it beat in the optics. And we went down to Espirito Santos, where they had a little Navy facility. And they took that gun off and put a new gun on. And, of course, it was our job to wire everything. And what a
tough job.
We got through it. Oh, and they had a dog. The dog would come down to the ship. He'd come up on the gangway.
A dog on the ship?
A dog. Mm-hmm. Belonged to Espirito Santos.
Oh.
And we would feed him hot dogs and things. When it came time to leave, we'd put him in a compartment and we hijacked the dog.
Took the dog.
We had a mascot.
I'll be darned. What'd you call him? What was his name?
I think we called him Mac.
Mac?
Mac. M-A-C, Mac.
I've been called worse than
Well, everybody in the Navy's Mac.
Yeah.
He's a little terrier.
How do you like being at sea in a ship and bouncing around?
I liked it, really.
That's interesting.
I got a liberal education in the Navy.
Tell us about the, you know, who you work for, your chief, your officers. What were they like?
Oh, they were swell. We had one guy come aboard who was a 90-day blunder.
Blunder?
A blunder. Mm-hmm. he was strictly Navy. It was overhead, deck, bulkhead, port, starboard. He was like goose up the ass with his Navy lingo. So we were on a condition watch, and the relief came up, and the trainer was a guy by the name of Jack Crotty from Chicago.
How do you spell his last name?
Crotty. Jack Crotty. Mm-hmm. And they relieved us. And this 90-day blunder was the control officer. And Jack turned to me and he said, "Yeah, Bill, let's go downstairs on the back porch and we'll smoke a cigarette." And the officer said, "You're going where?" he said. "Well, we're going downstairs on the back porch to smoke a cigarette." "You're going where?" "Oh," he said, "we're going downstairs on the back porch to smoke a cigarette, sir."
Oh.
He said, "You two idiots get out of this director."
And this was a 90-day blunder. Became an officer in 90 days.
Yeah.
Someplace, yeah.
But he turned out all right when he got a little experience.
Now, I know the chiefs pretty much run a lot of things.
We had no chief.
No chief?
No. We had a first class.
Oh.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No chief petty officer?
No. Oh. I had two first class. I was second class. I had about six second class and a raft of third class.
How many men in the ship did you take?
About 225.
You told us that. What happened later? Now, I see from your form here that you also served on the USS Midway.
Well, when I got discharged, I went back to Philadelphia.
Well, when were you discharged?
45, I guess.
Where were you when the war ended, may I ask?
Well, that's another story. Well, I went back to Advanced Fire Control School in D.C., in Washington, D.C. And at that time, they were getting ready for the invasion.
Japan.
And all the fire control people that went through there ended up on LSRs, which are landing ship rockets.
Rockets.
And I wasn't about to do that. So they had this thing at the school.
You had a choice?
Well, if you earned it, the top 10% of the class were automatically made instructors. So I graduated number two. And then we were assigned different places. And I had a choice of teaching in Norfolk, which I didn't like, and Fort Lauderdale. So I chose Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
Now, Fort Lauderdale then had two hotels on the beach, which were commandeered by the Navy, and they turned it into fire control training. We had the directors and computers there. And VJ Day came. Well, the head of the school restricted all the students. They couldn't leave the hotels. But the faculty was free to do what they wanted. So my buddy and I, we got on the bus and we went into Fort Lauderdale. And people were driving around, sitting on top of cars, drinking beer. Hooray, with American flags, whatever. And the Navy was this fire control school was the only facility in Fort Lauderdale. So we got off the bus and we're looking around. Yay. And I said to Harry, let's go over and get a beer. So we walked into this bar room. And the bartender said, "What can I do for you fellas?" we'd like a couple of beers. And he said, I'm sorry, but the mayor has declared all bars off limits to service personnel. He said, I can't serve you.
I hear that we're at the end of the war.
Yeah. That was my introduction to peace.
Interesting.
So ever since then, when I get into Fort Lauderdale, I make it a point to go to the public park and urinate.
You've rewarded Fort Lauderdale. That's fantastic. So
it was a terrible experience.
Yeah, awful experience. Then continue with that. Then what did you do after that?
Went back to the hotel. We weren't going to stay in that rotten town.
Boy.
It's bad. Yeah.
Then what happened to you?
Well, as I said, we were staying in hotels. And the war was over. And these guys come into the hotel with clipboards. And they came in our room and they said, we need new drapes here. And we said, take this carpet's got to go. And I said to my buddy, I said, we're not long for this world. They're getting ready for the season. They want to renovate this hotel, put it back as it should be. Sure enough, in 2 or 3 days, I was on a train to get discharged.
To where?
Up to Bainbridge, Maryland.
Bainbridge.
Huh. And I got discharged up there.
Then what did you do after you were discharged?
Well, I went back with the Bell.
Oh. Well, when did you serve on the Midway?
I was in the reserve.
Oh.
And they recalled the reserve. And this
during that's from for the Korean.
Yeah, for the Korean War. Mm-hmm. The Korean War.
Okay.
And this lieutenant said to me, "What kind of ship would you like? Would you like another tin can?" I said, "Give me the biggest goddamn ship in this Navy." Okay, you're going to the USS Midway, he said, which was the biggest ship at that time. Originally on a battleship hull, and then they decided they didn't need any more battleships. They needed carriers, and they made her into a carrier. And her sister ship was the FDR. And guess where they assigned these two ships? 6 months in the Mediterranean, 6 months in the state. 6 months in the Mediterranean. Now, the war's in Korea. Yeah. We're on a Mediterranean cruise.
Not too bad. Tell us about that.
Well, aboard a carrier, you can't move a gun if they're going to have aircraft launchings and landings, because one of these seamen and the gun might elevate it, and a plane will catch a wing on it and be a tragedy. So we never even got to shoot guns. We had target practice at times when we weren't away, but there was no hostility.
So
it's a great cruise.
You cruise the Mediterranean, aircraft landing and taking off, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess they thought something could stir in the Mediterranean, and we ought to have at least one carrier in the Mediterranean. Yeah. So we went back and forth 6 months at a time.
Did you get much liberty in the Mediterranean?
Oh, yes. Got to see the Pope.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So what was liberty like in Italy then? That must have been fun.
Well, I was delayed on the ship doing something, and the Liberty Party left. And I went down on the dock, and I'm walking in, and she said, Naples. Mm-hmm. And I thought, Phil, here you are. And the Romans created all this culture. Aren't you fortunate to be here? And this lady, as you use the term lady, she looked like a bowling ball. She come out of the shadows. She said, you want to fuck sailor? Get out of here. I thought I was living in culture. And that was my greeting to Italy. But Italy was a nice country. Yeah. Nice country. People were nice.
So you had back on the ship then, continued the cruise. Then you came back to the States for 6 months in the States. What would you do 6 months at home here?
Well, they'd renovate the ship, bring it up to date. Okay. A lot of junk went on.
What were your living conditions like on a carrier as opposed to a destroyer?
Oh, it was much better. Much better. Well, I was first class then. More than midway, they had a first class mess.
Mm-hmm. And you had better quarters, better accommodation?
Yes. Far better. When it would get hot, we'd go down in the plotting room where the computers were. And that was air conditioned, and we'd sleep down there.
That's it. And how long were you on the midway?
Oh, about a year or so. About a year.
Interesting, back and forth.
Never
in the Pacific, just stayed in the
Atlantic and the Med.
Well, now, when you were, traversing the back and forth, you didn't have much to do on the ship while you were sitting.
Routine tests are on. Mm-hmm. Always running tests on the computers.
Oh, I see.
And the guns, to make sure everything was shipshape. Not that we were going to shoot at anybody. But that's the Navy. They want to be ready.
How was the food on the...
Good. Good.
Was it just better than the destroyer?
Oh, yes.
More variety, maybe?
More variety.
I remember having time out. Let's take a break. Okay. Start. We'll go back.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, we're back with Mr. Lumpkin, and we are on the midway carrier, and it's about probably to get ready to be relieved of duty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When was that?
That was in 51 or something like that. Mm-hmm.
And where were you? Where were you when you were discharged again?
Norfolk, I believe.
Norfolk. And then what did you do?
Well, I went back with the Bell.
In Philadelphia.
And when I got back, they said, all the raises you've missed, we're going to give them to you.
Whoa.
Oh. Wow. That was nice.
I was on cloud nine.
Wow. How long did you work in Philadelphia then?
45 years.
45 years?
Yes. Stayed there.
You must have met your wife there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When were you married?
Oh, I got married in 42.
42?
42.
Oh, you were married while you were in the...
Yeah, and she died in 85.
Oh.
Nice lady.
No doubt.
Cancer.
Children?
Two girls.
And where are they now?
Well, one's in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
Very nice.
And the other one's in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah. Philadelphia area.
Yeah.
Then you were 45 years in the Philadelphia area. What did you do? What were your responsibilities?
I went from a messenger boy up to district level, which is third level in the hierarchy. I ended up in a thing called general trade. General trade is telephone equipment. But at that time, it was an antitrust activity going on. And they were always hollering at us, you only buy from Western Electric. You never buy anybody else. So the boys up in AT&T threw the names up, and one of my mine stuck on the ceiling. And I was a general trade representative. I was what they called the front door to Bell of Pennsylvania, if you wanted to sell us the telecommunications equipment, they had to come see me. And it got so sensitive that I had to document everything. I had a lawyer assigned to me. If I wanted to go to the bathroom, I had to call this guy. I'm going to the bathroom, Charlie. And they just say that. And I had 45 years of service. So I thought, what am I doing here? So I retired in 1960.
In 60? Then what did you do?
Then I had a life of leisure.
In Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia.
Well, now, how did you come to be in Fernand, the island?
My wife died in 85, and... I was a golfer. And I would play golf in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'd have a cup of coffee and eat a banana. And I'd go play golf. And I'd come back and the cup would still be sitting there. And that got to me. So I started shopping around for another wife. And I found a gem. She was a member of the same country club I was.
What country club?
Marion.
Marion. Nice club.
Yeah.
She sounds wonderful on the telephone.
She's a nice lady. So we got married.
When?
Oh, gee.
You better not forget.
That must have been in 88, I guess. I had 3 years by myself, and that was too much.
So then after you were married?
Well, we lived in a condo in Gladwin in Pennsylvania, if you're familiar with it. And then we decided we'd go to Florida. And we came down to Ormond Beach and bought a condo down there. And then we were commuting back and forth on 95. And that finally got to us. We said, the hell with this. So we sold the condo up north and consolidated all our belongings down in Ormond Beach. And when the smoke cleared, I had 62 screwdrivers. 62. I had two of everything. Two hand electric drills and two hammers and two hoochies. So I finally got rid of that and pared it down.
Well, she'd been married before, obviously. And
yes.
And, inherited her husband's tool kit.
That's right. And we had, the president of the Bell Telephone, that was my big boss, Bill Cashel, his name was. And I played a lot of golf with Bill. And he said, why don't you come up and take a look at Osprey Village?
Oh.
You might like it up there. So we came up, drove up Hexer Drive. And Gene said, I'm not going to live up here. This is the boonies. There's no houses or anything. And then we finally got to the plantation. And she said, oh, this is looking better. So we went over to, Bill was in Osprey Village. And we went over to Osprey Village and looked there. We said, this is it. Bango. We landed in the asylum.
In the asylum. When was this?
That was about 6 years ago.
Six years ago.
They call it a retirement community. I call it a finishing school.
Interesting. Well, you've had a very, very, very interesting life. Tell me, now, I wanted one further question. Did the Navy help you in any way with your post-Navy career, or were you already so well-founded in the electronics?
Loyal to Ma Bell. They always treated me right, and I treated them right. Good company. I keep thinking of that Judge Green. I hope a thousand fleas and fists had screwed him.
What did he do?
Judge Green, he was the one that broke up the whole system.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that should conclude. I think
you
that's
got enough bullshit.
That's enough bullshit.
It's pretty good.
Very excellent. I thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I think it was a very fine interview. I thoroughly enjoyed. Thank you, sir.
Right.
We appreciate it.
Put the end of it. Okay.
I just want to take some of this stuff out. I don't think they need it.
Hold on.
Okay. I should say that this concludes our interview with William J. Lumpkin, and on behalf of the nation, the History Project, thank you, sir, very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.